Welcome back to The Takeaway. It's Todd Zwillick. And a quick story, if you'll let me, about a musical punch I got in the face as a kid. I was about 15 years old, maybe 16. My friend and I were there, two kids, in Hershey, Pennsylvania, listening to tapes from down in D.C., you know, the kind with the handwritten labels on them. We were turned on to something that wasn't on the radio, and it wasn't on repeat at the high school dances we used to go to. And then one Saturday in the spring, we drove down to D.C. for an afternoon show, all ages, at 930 F Street in Washington, D.C.'s old 930 Club. They stuck a black magic marker X on your hand at the door to show no drinking. And that was the first time I saw the D.C. punk scene and the first time I saw Fugazi. When we have the thing. Whoa, these guys weren't talking about who they wanted to dance with or that they're never going to give you up. No, they were mad. They were mad about corporations. They were mad about money over people. They were mad about racists. And the kids, we stood on the side at the 930 Club because we were outsiders. But the kids in the crowd looked like a family. Now, that was on the East Coast, of course, a punk awakening for me. But 3,000 miles away in Northern California, they had already had their punk renaissance, the sharp edge of punk in the late 70s in the Bay Area, where a movement was born.
We loved it because it was something new, fresh, that wasn't the Eagles, wasn't Led Zeppelin, and wasn't Saturday Night Fever.
That's Jello Biafra, the frontman for the Dead Kennedys, talking about the birth of the San Francisco punk scene in a new film. It's called Turn It Around, The Story of East Bay Punk. Corbett Redford is the director and the producer of that film, and he says the ethos around punk that developed in the Bay Area at the time was this willingness to say what you mean and say it without fear, and that stuck with punk for decades.
There was already this kind of vibe of resistance going on, and a lot of punks, I think, they condemn the hippies. You didn't get the job done. You know, the revolution fell flat. But at least in the Bay Area, a lot of the punk kids, their parents were activists or authors or professors at the university. So there really wasn't this typical punk plight to condemn the hippies. It kind of morphed into the art school there, the Institute in San Francisco. Bands like Dead Kennedys and Avengers started cropping up. Crime, The Nuns.
So you've been to school for a year or two, and you know you've seen it all.
And Bill Graham, who was the kind of, you know, monolith rock promoter in San Francisco, he did not like punk. He couldn't stand it. So punk culture kind of got maligned to playing at a Filipino supper club called the Mabuhay Gardens. It was like the CBGBs of San Francisco. So the birth of punk in the Bay Area happened in San Francisco, but slowly as the culture started to change, it went over the Bay into Berkeley and Oakland.
Talk about Bill Graham. You mentioned him, the massive legendary promoter in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. He didn't like punk at all, but also kind of gave a rallying point of hatred for a lot of punks to organize themselves around their hatred of him.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's very interesting. Vicariously, I found out the beginning plight to form the 924 Gilman Street Punk Music Collective in Berkeley happened because of something that Bill Graham said to Tim Yohannan, the publisher of Maximum Rock and Roll magazine out of San Francisco, a punk periodical that's been around for 30 plus years. He had an interview with Yohannan on KPFA radio and said, "All right, you kids, you want a place where you can break things and spray paint on the walls? Fine. You know, you go find it and I'll fund it." So Tim Yohannan and Jeff Bale and Ruth Schwartz, they all went out to look for this place. They came back to Graham and they said, "Here, you know, we found this place." And he says, "You've got to be kidding me." Vicariously, he actually, the place where that launched Green Day and Rancid and Operation Ivy, Neurosis, all of these fantastic bands, ultimately came to be because of a fleeting dare by Graham.
There's a war coming down between my breast and mine. I don't want no war.
Well, let's talk about the music a little bit. In fact, let's talk about the music a lot because it's one of the best parts of this film. Jella Biafra says in your movie, he's the front man for Dead Kennedys, of course, says in this way that only he can, you know, before 1977, all you had was the Eagles and Zeppelin and Saturday Night Fever and ELO. And he's saying that music, even if it was good, like Zeppelin, didn't have anything to say, at least not to him.
I love a lot of those bands, but it could be said that there was such, you know, a litany of that stuff coming out, and it felt kind of bloodless. You know, it was all overproduced, and you couldn't hear the energy and the humanity in it, I guess. And so something needed to break. I think the same thing wound up happening when Green Day got big, or when Nirvana got big. You know, you had a lot of the hair metal and the 80s rock that was going on, and Nirvana just blew those doors open and really spoke to young people and the disenfranchised, because you could kind of hear something in it that really hit your heart. Would you believe me when I tell you you're the queen of my heart? Please don't deceive me when I hurt you. Just ain't the way it seems.
Somebody says in your film, I can't remember who, that sometimes it can be hard to tell just how good a punk rock guitarist really is.
Right.
What does that mean, and why is that?
I think that when people think of punk rock, they think of this very simple kind of chord progression. They think of, like, say, like the Ramones. What people don't understand is that what the Ramones did themselves was change the face of rock and roll. When you take that simple structure of a punk song and you start kind of being adventurous with it, like people like East Bay Ray or of the Dead Kennedys or Tom Flynn of Fang have done, something completely new comes out of that.
So let's talk about what punk is today, Corbett. Green Day helped produce this project,
yes,
as you mentioned. You talk a bit in the film about the commercialization of punk, and of course there's no way around the fact that a lot of fans consider Green Day the poster child of commercialization.
Right.
They consider them sellouts. They've been called worse. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
So what about their role in that? What about their role in this film?
I would say that to anybody who has the argument, you know, punk is different things to different people. This is a public service announcement. This is only a test. Emergency evacuation protest. What we have to do is look back at, you know, the beginning punk bands, the Sex Pistols, the Clash, the Ramones, Blondie. These were all bands that were on major labels, right? And just like they did back then, bands like Green Day getting big, or Offspring, or you know, Rancid, who stayed on an independent, actually. The bands that did sign, they created inroads to the culture for millions of people, just like those early folks did.
The film is Turn It Around, the story of East Bay Punk. Corbett Redford is the director. Corbett, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.